Good evening, everyone. This is Goth Nerd Revelations with me, your host, Goth Nerd. And tonight, I wanted to talk about many different things. But first off, I want to talk about that, convention season really has just kind of kicked into full swing. And by that, I mean that pretty much what happened was last year, you had a few conventions open up. Testing the waters, but they were they reopened up, but they were kind of these smaller affairs, kind of, and you had a decent amount of people going, but it's like this year, it's like they really have kicked into full swing because most of the conventions this year, it's like each convention has been packed with people, especially a few of the more recent ones that have come up, because you had a few weeks ago, you had Dallas Fan Expo, and just this last week, you had Denver Fan Expo, later on this month, you're going to have San Diego Comic-Con, and then, also later on, you're going to have, like, Boston Fan Expo. There's a lot of really, huge amount of conventions just happening. And like I said, it's been a really great draw this year because they've all been packed, as I've said. It wasn't like last year where they were kind of testing things out. They had mask mandates in place, and it was kind of these more smaller things, as I said. Now this year, it's like we're going back to, in some cases, like pre-pandemic levels of people attending these things. And in some cases even more because I had gotten it from a great source, that Denver Fan Expo, let me put it this way. The same source had told me about Dallas Fan Expo. That whole thing was packed. And this source also had told me that Denver Fan Expo, as packed as Dallas Fan Expo was, Denver Fan Expo was like double that. It's just a huge amount of people. So like I said, convention season is really back in full swing. And that's good because these fan conventions, most of them are usually, comic conventions, but I use the term fan conventions because of the fact that it's so much more than just comic books. Comic books is still a part of it, it's still a part of that, very much. But there's also various different bits of fandom that are hit there. It's not just comic books. You even have novel writers there. You have people who just do, art professionally, not just comic book artists, but people who just really just, will do up art and sell that for a living. You have TV personalities, you have movie personalities, you have stores selling various bits of merchandise, toy stores, comic book stores, just a merchandise kind of places. You know, there's just so many different bits of fandoms that are pretty much represented and just you know, kind of showcased in a lot of these conventions. And then another thing is years and years ago, what happened was, because what a lot of people may or may not know is the people who own San Diego Comic-Con own a lot of various different conventions. It's not just the San Diego Comic-Con convention, but they also do things like WonderCon, you know, and a few other events in and around that area. But and in fact, the people who do San Diego Comic-Con, they have actually won a court battle in which they are the only ones that officially can call themselves a Comic-Con. Now there's a bit of a gray area on this one, because they only own the rights to call something a comic space con. However, there's a lot of places that have taken to calling themselves a Comic-Con, but how they get around it is they don't call themselves a Comic-Con. They call themselves a Comic-Con, which is basically C-O-M-I-C-O-N. So it's not two separate words. They should combine it into one word. And that's a bit of a gray area, which I guess you can technically call it that and not get in trouble. And then, once again, and this comes from the same source that I got from, I'm not a news reporter. I'll just tell you who my source is. I've talked to Chad Harden, and he's gone to a lot of these conventions. And he keeps me up to date on what's going on with these things. Now, Chad had told me because there's a lot of you may have noticed that there are some comic conventions that have rebranded themselves as a fan expo. And a lot of you may be like, oh well, because you're maybe thinking that it has to do with the Comic-Con thing with San Diego. That's kind of sort of right, but that's actually not why they've done it. Really, why they have done it is due to the fact that there's a company there's a group of people that very much like the people who own San Diego Comic-Con. But what happens is that their brand is basically Fan Expo, and so basically anything that has the Fan Expo name usually attached to it is owned by this stream of people. Now, in another interesting note, one of the things that's kind of really funny, you know, it's almost like they play with fire. But a lot of the people who do our comic convention in Salt Lake, they have this thing where it's almost like they want to play with fire, because the funny thing is, they first had branded themselves as Salt Lake Comic-Con, and you know very much in the vein of San Diego Comic-Con, but it was owned by a different group of people. And Salt Lake also has kind of a different emphasis on things, because, interestingly enough, most other comic conventions, but I don't know, maybe San Diego's a bit different, but most other comic conventions will really have a bit of an emphasis on a bit of everything fandom. You know, you have a little bit of comic books, a little bit of, you know, television movies, this and that. Now, most comic conventions usually will emphasize more of the comic side of things and less of the others. Salt Lake Comic Con really had more of an emphasis on the celebrity part of it, and even less of an emphasis on the actual comic creators. But for many years, what had happened was they were going by the Comic Con name. San Diego sued them, and for years and years, they were engaged in this court battle with no clear winner. A few years ago, I think it was about 2018, 2019, in and around that time period, San Diego won the court battle, and they were able to basically take the brand Comic-Con with them. And basically, their company was the only one that was allowed to have the name Comic Space Con. And so Salt Lake was forced to change the name. And for a bit there, they were just calling them Salt Lake Comic Convention, just adding the full name. But they were starting to test out a new name, which once again it sounds like they're playing with fire. And they started sort of a thing called known as FanX. And now they just keep calling and the for actually for the last for last year and then this year, they've just been going by Salt Lake FanX. Which, yes, happens to sound remarkably close to Fan Expo, but they are also not part of that group either. So, I mean, I don't, listen, and I'm not gonna point fingers here or anything. I personally don't know the people who run the Salt Lake Convention, so I can't say what their thought process is. But yeah, but it's kind of funny. It's just it you know, I think it would be much better for Salt Lake if they would just maybe kind of reach out and work with some of these people. Hell, if they wanted the Comic-Con name, I'm sure they could have talked to the San Diego people and maybe kind of had some sort of collaboration, and it would have been fine. And like I said, and then I mean, I guess they're technically it's off enough that that they can't get sued, but I mean, we're calling it Fan X when there's a bunch of fan expos out there. It seems like, to me anyway, once again, this is just my thoughts on it. It just seems like Salt Lake is kind of playing with fire again. It's like Salt Lake wants to garner attention by taking up a name that has a lot of clout to it. But they don't want to actually work with the people who own that name. So, it just that's just what it seems like from my perspective. I could be dead wrong on this. As I said, it's just do I know the people? No. So I'm not going to definitively point out and maybe point fingers at anything. That's just what it seems like to me, as I said. But yeah, it's just kind of a really interesting thing. Now, I've had a mixed bag of reviews when it comes to when it comes to the Salt Lake Convention. Like I said, it used to be Salt Lake Comic Con, then it was Salt Lake Comic Convention, then it's Salt Lake FanX. But for the sake of not being confused, I'll just go from here on in. I'll just refer him to as FanX. But anyway, with FanX, it's just like as I said, I've heard a mixed bag of reviews. So the fact of the matter is I'm not quite sure on this one. So we'll just have to kind of see. But the thing is that so when it comes to FanX, the sort of consensus I've got, because these are people who've actually attended the convention. I've got perspectives from fans who've gone there, And I've got perspectives from creators who have gone there. Now, in terms of, in terms of fans, just for the sake of, I don't know whether they want their names mentioned or not, so I won't mention names on this one, but I have talked to a few fans, and as far as the fan experience goes with FanX, that seems to be pretty good. Most fans will usually say they like it, they think it's a great convention, that they usually have easy to find booths, easy to find events, and and they usually would talk about how most of the people there are very nice and very generous and are happy to help out. Now, from the creator perspective, like I said, the fan perspective so far, at least what I've heard from FanX, has been pretty positive. But from a creator perspective, this is where the mixed bag comes in, because I've heard from one creator, and once again, this is another one who I'm not sure if they want their name mentioned, so I won't mention it. But there's one creator I had talked to, and this person, they had told me that I guess it wasn't the greatest experience ever, but they said that their experience was fine. They met a good amount of friends there. It wasn't the best convention they had gone to, but they actually enjoyed it and they wouldn't mind going again. Now, this person, and he doesn't mind if I mention his name because I've mentioned it before, but Chad Harden, his perspective had been different. He had gone to FanX at least a few times, and he said each time was horrible for him. There was one time when they put his booth clear out in the middle of nowhere, and they didn't fix the whole thing because he was supposed to be out where people could see him. Another year he had gone there and for some strange reason, and nobody would give him a good logical reason for this, for some strange reason, people were going around saying that he had canceled and that he wasn't there. But the fact is, he was there. His booth was there. People could clearly see him. But there were people who were part of the Salt Lake FanX team who were going around telling people that he had canceled and he wasn't there. So that was a bone of contention for him. And for the most part, what it came down to was general lack of communication. And what would happen was he would bring up a complaint but they wouldn't do anything about it. It's like if there's a problem, go and do something about it. Nobody likes to have problems, but if you address the problem and you fix the problem, then that's better than to ignore that there was a problem in the first place. For lack of a better term, it's a big no-no. You don't do that. It's like you want to be transparent in your communication be honest, The fact of the matter is, it sucks when your convention's having problems. But personally, and once again, this is just my perspective, I've been there, so I don't know. But like I said, I just find it's better that if you communicate your problems and try to work out a solution than to, try and just act as if it never happened or make it seem as if the person who brought up the complaint is the problem. You know, it's just like, it's just like, no, that's not a way to run a railroad. Okay. That's, you don't do that. So pretty much what had happened, and ever since then, Chad has vowed never to go back to Salt Lake Fanex. He said they just burned too many bridges for him, and he's not going back. When it comes to things like San Diego Comic-Con, Chad has said he's had a wonderful experience going to that convention. You know, he said the con people are willing to work with him. There's more communication. People are more willing to work things out. And really, that's probably the best way to do things. You know, so because whether you like the direction that San Diego Comic-Con has gone in, because, you know, there are older comic book people who don't really like San Diego Comic-Con these days and really don't attend anymore. Longtime people, famously, because Eric Larson, one of the co-founders of Image, he used to attend San Diego Comic-Con regularly, but it was about I can't remember the exact year, please forgive me, but I think the last time he ever went to San Diego Comic-Con was about 2008-2009, and he just stopped going, because he had said it wasn't worth it anymore. He said that they emphasize the more entertainment side of things rather than the comic side of things. There's more attention paid to the Hollywood stars and the movie events rather than the comic books and the comic book creators. And then another one was, they were a long time patron of San Diego Comic-Con. They'd been there since the beginning, but it was about 2014, I believe, was the last time they went and never came back. But it was Mile High Comics. Mile High Comics was a company, as I said, they were a comic book company that, they were a comic book retailer, not to be confused with a comic book publisher, but they were a comic book retailer that had been at San Diego Comic-Con since its inception. They had been going there for a long, long time. I believe the first San Diego Comic-Con was sometime in the early 70s. Please forgive me if I can't remember the exact year, but I think it was somewhere around 71, 72, 73, one of those years. But it was definitely early 70s. And Mile High Comics, as I said, were part of this whole thing since the very beginning. And they had been going there steadily till about 2014. And this information I had gotten this and I don't mind saying this, I got this information from Rob Servations, which is Rob Liefeld's podcast. I definitely urge you to check that out. Lots of great information on that. But Rob Liefeld has said that he had even talked to the guy who owns Mile High Comics. His name had been mentioned. Unfortunately, I blanked out again. My poor memory just can't remember, just can't hold on to these things. And yes, I know many of you by this time will think, well, maybe you should be taking notes by this point. But you know, there is that old saying: an old dog doesn't learn new tricks. I don't think I'll ever learn. So you know, you just have to bear with me on that one. But anyway, the owner of Mile High Comics he had talked to Rob Liefeld, and he was honest, and he had said that he's like, listen, in the early days, it was totally worth it to come to these conventions because they were packed with fans who wanted to come and experience the comic book side of things. And what would happen was he would go in, he would make a bundle of money there, and it would be totally worth the time and money he would spend to go there because he would get back more money than what he had spent. But he said by the time they started emphasizing more of the movies over the comics, he said that margin was becoming uneven. It was starting to get to the point where he was spending more money getting out to the convention and getting all the merchandise out and setting up their whole elaborate booth. He said it was getting to where that was costing him more than the money he would get while being at the convention. So 2014 was their last year, and in 2015 they announced they were not coming back to San Diego, and they have not been back since. They're still around. This isn't like the whole sad thing. It's like, oh yes, and they closed up shop, blah blah blah. No, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. But Mile High Comics is still around. In fact, you can check it out because Mile High Comics actually has their own YouTube channel, and they have a whole bunch of really great things on there. And the shop owner does many different videos. I suggest just that's just a totally totally awesome one is he has a is it three or four part. But it's at least a three or four part, but he has a multi-part interview with Jim Shooter, and I highly recommend it. This is another one that I think is great because it paints Jim Shooter in a more positive light. As I've talked about in many podcasts, poor Jim Shooter has been given a bad rap by many different parts of the comic book community. And I'll admit it, Jim Shooter, in some cases may have not made the best decisions, but in certain cases, I would say that he's one of the best, he is one of the best cheerleaders when it comes to creators and creators' rights. Jim Shooter really helped to make sure that creators, especially during his tenure as editor-in-chief at Marvel, he made sure that creators were compensated. If it were not for Jim Shooter, you wouldn't even be getting royalties at Marvel, okay? If you get a nice royalty over at Marvel, you might want to thank Jim Shooter for that. Because Jim Shooter was the one who made sure that Marvel was giving a royalty percentage to its creators, okay? Because like I said, when I talked about things happening in the Golden Age and Silver Age and stuff like that, even in the brand, even in the Bronze Age, big companies like DC and Marvel, were not properly compensating their talent. The only thing you would get was a page rate. If you were working on a good comic, like maybe say you were working for Superman, if you're doing Superman, Batman, or Spider-Man or something like that, you were getting a really great page rate and you were paid really well while you were working on that title. But the moment you stepped away, you got nothing. Your page rate was gone and you got nothing. So you just had to hope that you landed a job that, that was paying you at least an equal amount. And what happened was with guys like Jim Shooter, He made sure that not only were you getting a solid page rate, but he made sure that you were getting a percentage of the royalties. Not only that, but that you were getting creators' compensation. If you created a new character at Marvel, he made sure that you always got a percentage of that, whether you were working for Marvel or not. If you had created that character at Marvel, you always got a percentage of that. Want to know one of the reasons why Rob Liefeld's always promoting Deadpool all the time? It's because even when he had left Marvel, Rob Liefeld was still getting royalty payments for Deadpool. To this day, Rob Liefeld is still getting royalty payments for Deadpool. So, that's what I'm saying, is that, but Jim Shooter's the guy who helped set that up. But either way, getting back to Mile High Comics and all that stuff. But either way, check it out. Go to the Mile High Comics YouTube page, and as I said, it's like a 4-part interview where the owner of Mile High Comics interviews Jim Shooter and talks about that particular point in time when Jim Shooter was the editor-in-chief over at Marvel. And in fact, both of them have been good friends for many years. Interestingly enough, when they had first initially met, they were not friends at all, and they didn't like each other. They were famously at each other's throats. However, as they got into the 80s, they both became very good friends and have been very good friends ever since. And as I said, I like this because this shows that maybe a lot of those stories that you'd heard that Jim Shooter was this horrible guy and he did these horrible things to people and all that, that may just be down to perspective, because of the fact that Jim Shooter has done a lot of good for comic books and comic book creators. So whether you love him or hate him, he's done a lot of good on that front. Anyway, Mile High Comics is still around, even though they don't attend San Diego Comic-Con anymore. It was still a sad day, though, because when you have sort of a staple of a convention like this, I said Mile High Comics had been attending San Diego Comic-Con since it had started. They were one of the first places to kind of set up shop there. But as I said, when it came come around to 2014, and as I said, the owner of Mile High Comics was saying that in the beginning, it was worth it coming down there, as I was emphasizing before. He said it was worth it coming down there because of the fact that they would always make more than what they spent, you know. But he said, come 2014, he had said their expenses became much more than what they were getting back. So he just said it just wasn't worth it coming there anymore. And so, like I said, they don't attend anymore. 2014 was their last year. But the good thing is they're still around as a business. You can still visit Mile High Comics. And as I said, they have their own YouTube channel, which I highly recommend you go and check that out. But yeah, I mean, but it's just a whole bunch of different things all over the place. But yeah, I mean, you know, and then like I said, you have all these large staples just kind of... And a lot of these comic conventions, especially San Diego Comic-Con, because the fact of the matter is a lot of them are staples because of the fact that they were some of the first. Some of the first comic conventions were popping up in the Bay Area in California. You know, that's where WonderCon started. In fact, you know, it's like it's owned by the same people, San Diego Comic-Con today. But I believe it was its own thing back in the day. But anyway, it just kind of cropped up, and then many other conventions start cropping up all over the place. And they said, and now you've got your Comic Cons and your Fan Expos and your Fan X's and the just all over the place. And the and it varies depending on which area you're in. And then it also varies just depending on you who you are as a person, because I mean, certain events appeal to different kinds of people. I know there are some conventions, and I can understand these ones because, you know, being a comic book creator myself, I love these ones. There's some conventions that will try to emphasize more of the comic book end of things. Still focus on some of the others, but have less emphasis on them. The big emphasis being the comic books. Then you have ones that are very much sort of celebrity events. You know, San Diego has become one of them. The Salt Lake Fan X convention's one of them. And then even some of these fan expos, they'll emphasize a lot of the celebrity end of things. But then there are some that will emphasize others because these aren't the only conventions in town. I mean, you have horror conventions, which that's the big draw there. It's everything horror, and it's various mediums of horror, because horror has various mediums, because they'll have a comic book side on that too, but it'll be, everything horror based comic books. It'll be horror TV shows, horror films, horror novels, even horror video games. And that was another thing I'd forgotten to mention, and I'm sorry, I was remiss in my duties on this one. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of emphasis on some video games with some of these conventions as well. The whole point is if it's considered a nerd / geek medium, it's usually represented at one of these conventions in either a small way or a large way, just depending on the emphasis of the convention. There's anime conventions, and a lot of them will have a lot of similar stuff as to most other conventions, but the big emphasis will be on anime, and also manga, because anime and manga kind of go hand in hand, because the majority of anime is usually based on some kind of manga. That's not to say that there isn't any original anime that's not based on any existing material, but the lion's share of anime out there is usually based on some form of manga. But my point is that each convention will have an emphasis on a certain kind of thing. You know, as I said, there are conventions that will emphasize more of the sort of Hollywood kind of thing. There are conventions that will emphasize the anime, conventions that will emphasize comics, video games, whichever medium under the sun, there's usually a convention for it. You even look at something like, because I'd seen this as well, the original cast of the show Dark Shadows, which was sort of a supernatural soap opera that they had aired on ABC, and it ran from 1966 to 1971, and that also has its own fan conventions. They have Dark Shadows conventions, that's cool as well. But what do they emphasize? Well, they emphasize Dark Shadows, and that's apparently been a big thing, especially amongst fans, and there are even new people getting into it. But I can understand, because the funny thing is when I was younger, and my mom would go and watch Dark Shadows. When I found out it was a soap opera, I was just like, ah, I'm not gonna like this. It's stupid. But the fact of the matter is, there were several things that convinced me to go and watch it. One, around the time I had started to discover it, there was a remake of Dark Shadows that they were doing, at the time that had starred Ben Cross. Unfortunately, it was only a 13-episode show, but what had happened was when I had watched it, I had found out that, well, this was pretty much around the same time, like I said, but I had found out that that it was based on an older show. Like I said, first off, I found out it was a soap opera, so I was like, I don't know, I didn't like that, because the sad thing is, I had a sister who was really, like, overly obsessed with soap operas, and I didn't really like them, and they weren't really for me, so I kind of wrestled with that for a minute. But then again, when I was told, well, but it's a soap opera about, vampires and witches and, all sorts of creepy gothic things, I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll check it out. But I'm glad I did, because I really like it. It really is a great gothic story. But like I said, yeah, it's got its own convention, one set of movies and TV series that I liked was Highlander. And Highlander has its own conventions, so it's like, as I said, if it's a geek related thing, there's probably some convention for it. Whether it's the specific convention for it, or they maybe have a booth at one of the other kind of fan conventions, there was always there. Now they don't have their own convention, but you can usually see them amongst all the geek related conventions all across the country. But you go around, and they even have a section for the actors who were in the Flash Gordon movie from 1980. A lot of them will attend conventions, so it's like, it's pretty cool, that even that gets its own space at various conventions. Like I said, it doesn't have its own convention like maybe, say, Dark Shadows does, or Highlander does, but it's still great to see them at conventions all across the country. And then hopefully the world, because I mean, thing is, what I emphasize, conventions have opened up all around the country. However, international flight is still an iffy thing. Not a lot of people can still do international flights, because we still, I mean, even though we're coming off of the pandemic, like, we're kind of seeing the last of it, it hasn't quite gone away. And so international travel's still really iffy right now. But as I said, conventions all over the country, all over the United States have opened up, and it's great to see that. And then also, I mean technically it's still part of the country. It's not part of the United States, but it's still part of the country. Because there's a you can still go and do conventions in Canada, even if you're from the States. And I think even some say in Mexico. But as far as international travel, that's still an iffy prospect. But like I said, hopefully, you still be able to do some international stuff maybe this next coming year. But as I said, the pandemic seems to pretty much be winding down. I mean, yeah, it's not finished yet, because I still know plenty of people, even friends of mine who have caught COVID, sadly. But it does seem like it's winding down. And it looks and it's great because you get I say you all these packed conventions now. And you know and not a whole lot of people are really wearing masks anymore. For me, yeah, I still wear mine. The thing is I'm a hypochondriac with obsessive compulsive disorder on top of it all. So I'll probably be wearing a mask even when a lot of people just think I'm that kooky guy who wears masks and sanitizes all the time, that's just me. But either way, it's still great to see a lot of these things open up and see the conventions happening again and back in full swing, because I mean, I think people have needed this. Especially in light of the last, how much of a mental toll the, last 2 years have been. It's really changed people a lot, some for the better, some for the worse. But you can say this is that people are not the same. Nobody is the same now that they were pre-pandemic. We are very much living in a whole different world these days. Some things for better, some things for worse, but the whole thing is it's different. And it's never going to be the same again, okay? I don't care what anybody says. The fact of the matter is that it last 2 years have taken a big mental toll on everybody. So my personal thoughts on this is that no one's ever going to be the same again. This is something that's going to be remembered for at least a good solid generation, maybe two. But it was the same thing. But it was the same thing back in 1918 when they had because there was a world pandemic. The Spanish flu pandemic that happened in 1918 and lasted till 1920. And what happened was there was a lot of sanitation sanitary rules. There were a lot of sanitary rules that were put into place that lasted for at least two generations. I mean, my mom had told me that they really emphasize, washing your hands and stuff when she was a little kid. She said they didn't really start getting lax on that until the 1970s. But what I'm saying is, now that conventions are opening up again, I think this is a good thing for people, for their mental health. I think people have been wanting to get away, wanting to at least feel some kind of normalcy. I don't think that other things will ever get back to like quote unquote normal, but this is as close as you can get, people. In many cases, like to go back to the familiar. And comic conventions have become very familiar, have become a part of culture around the world. Not just here in the States, I mean, because it's very still much emphasized here in the States, but it's all over the world. I mean, because they have conventions in Japan, they have conventions in Europe, they have conventions in South America. It's just all over the world, usually will have some kind of fan convention, and as I said, and I think what happens is it gives people, especially opening up now, and the fact that they're getting packed as they are, as I said, I think it brings back at least some sense of normalcy, at least in that regard. Like I said, will things ever get back to complete, quote-unquote, normal? I don't think so, but I think these are things that can help you move forward and at least and at least feel like something that was missing has come back. At least in that regard, you know, because, you know, and I think fan conventions are important, you know, because, you know, because a lot of people will have something that they're into. Everyone's a geek or a nerd of some sort. Whether it's that you're into movies, video games, comic books, but hell, even if you're into sports, there's something out there for you. The fact of the matter is everyone's a geek about something, okay? You find something you like and you become obsessed with it, and you study various aspects of it that might be considered unhealthy, okay? You know, for those of you who was like, I don't memorize movies or video games, but it's like, well, do you memorize your favorite sports team? Do you memorize their stats? Do you, you know, it's like, do you play fantasy football? You know, it's like, you're just basically playing D&D for jocks. You know, everybody is a fan of something, even if it's vehicles, okay? I'm sure you study the hell out of those vehicles and learn all the stats on them, okay? You know, so the fact of the matter is that everybody becomes a geek about something. But I think it's great that we have these things, that they're reopening, and that we're getting, you know, that we at least are having that to sort of ease the blow of how tumultuous reality can be. But either way, I wanted to end it on a positive note, and positive note is, hey, conventions are back. Convention season is happening in full swing. Find yourself a convention near you and just, you know, go and have yourself a blast. Anyway, it's about time that I got to my novel and comic book recommendations. So as far as my novel recommendations go, so, you know, unfortunately, this is a subject that I'm not familiar with novels pertaining to comic conventions. Sorry, forgive me for that one. So I'm just going to refer to default and just pick one of my favorites. for my novel recommendation for tonight, I am going to recommend Neuromancer from William Gibson. Neuromancer is a really great cyberpunk novel. In fact, it's one of the novels which really kicked off the cyberpunk genre. Now, let me put this way. Now, the godfather of cyberpunk was probably Philip K. Dick. However, when he was writing, there was no such thing as a cyberpunk genre. Philip K. Dick would be considered sort of more of proto-cyberpunk. He invented some of the building blocks which led to cyberpunk. William Gibson is known as sort of the first official cyberpunk author. He was the one that embraced the term, and the whole thing is just pure cyberpunk. And Neuromancer is a really great heist story. You know, there's this guy who, and I'm so sorry, I forget the main character's name. Please forgive me on that one. I think I actually might have it near me. Case. Sorry. Yeah. The main character's name is Case. Case, is this, hacker who he's one of those people that has one of these kind of he's got like a neurojack installed in the back of his head, and he basically can tap into what is known as the Matrix, and yes, if you're thinking about the Matrix, like the movie Matrix. The movie Matrix was inspired by things like this. But he can basically tap into the computer network. And but what had happened was that he had been burnt out, too many years of getting fried on various different things. He is approached by a sort of benefactor named Armitage, and he basically wants him to do one last sort of break-in for him. It's like one last heist. And he basically helps to give him his he basically fully repairs his problems and basically is able to get it to where he can be the hacker that he once was. But there's a catch to it, is that because at first Case is not really kind of, he's kind of wondering what's the guy's angle and he doesn't want to do it. But to ensure he does it, Armitage basically says, "I've installed these sacks in your body, and if you do not basically get me what I want within a certain amount of time, these sacks will go off and then you'll be as useless as you were before. I repaired everything." So, but it's always a really, really great cyberpunk story, really awesome, and I highly recommend that you check it out. So please definitely check it out. Neuromancer from William Gibson. Anyway, my comic book recommendation for the evening, and like I said, hey, we're talking about comic conventions, and so hey, in this case, any comic book applies, because hey, comic conventions have a lot of comic books, but. So in those terms, I'm going to recommend another one of my favorites. And in fact, I'm going to go, and I've recommended this many times on the show, but it's just because it's my favorite, okay? I may recommend it many times, but it's because it's my favorite. I'm going to recommend Chris Claremont's run on the X-Men, the entire run. Now, if you want a good place to start, I would say start at the beginning. However, if you want to ease yourself into some stuff, a few stories I would recommend right off the bat is you have the Dark Phoenix saga, and you have sort of the Days of Future Past storyline. Those are two storylines I do highly recommend you check out. A lot of fun and really great stories. But either way, I'm going to recommend the entire Chris Claremont run. Chris Claremont is the longest writer on X-Men. He wrote X-Men from 1975 to 1992. Like I said, just a really long, excellent run. 17 years on that title. Nobody else is going to touch it. Chris Claremont, and then Chris Claremont changed X-Men in ways that are so huge. He may not have invented the X-Men, but he certainly had a huge impact on it. Most storylines, most character arcs are usually based on something that Chris Claremont has done. Chris Claremont had some of the best events on there. Just as I mentioned, he did Dark Phoenix Saga, he did Days of Future Past. He did the Wolverine miniseries with Frank Miller. He did the Mutant Massacre storyline, Follow the Mutants, Inferno, Extinction Agenda. He did that 8 million selling X-Men comic with Jim Lee. He's just done some excellent stuff. So definitely highly recommend it. Check out Chris Claremont's run on the X-Men. It's just amazing. Anyway, it's about time I wrap this whole thing up. Glad you all, listen to this. For those who at least get something out of it, I am totally grateful for each and every one of you who listens to this show. And hey, with that all being said, I hope you all have a wonderful evening, and I'll see you all again in the next episode.